The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
As you know, if you're trying to get a tradesperson at the moment, you're probably trying to repair something in the house. It is very difficult. If you do get them, it's also very expensive. But even more fundamental than the householders, lots of companies and organisations up and down the country cannot get skilled tradespeople, mainly or certainly partially because they are not going in to do apprenticeships. Well, the Minister for Further and Higher Education, Simon Harris, has announced today he's rolling out €17.2 million in capital funding to respond to this growing demand for apprenticeships. And a lot of it is about persuading younger people to take the apprenticeship route. And he's live on the line now. Minister Harris, good evening and welcome to the Hard Shoulder.
Good evening, Amos. Thanks for having me on.
Listen, let's talk about that persuasion point first of all. I know you're putting hard cash down and we'll come to the different elements of that for a start. Is it a hard sell at the moment, do you sense, and from talking to people in the sector, to get youngsters to look at apprenticeships? Is the resistance there? What are you picking up from people who are very much at the coalface here?
Yeah, so look, I think there's a good and a bad. I mean, last year we saw the highest number of people ever registered to be apprentices in Ireland. So we had 8,607 people who took the plunge last year and said, I want to be an apprentice. Just to give you an idea, that's a 40% increase on 2019, which is probably the last kind of normal year before COVID. So there's no doubt we're seeing more and more people putting up their hands and saying, I see an apprenticeship as a way forward. That's the good news. I think the bad news, if we're being very honest, is the education system has really narrowed the conversation about pathways and options after school. The CAO system is all about, you know, points, tell me the name of the university you're going to. And we have to broaden that conversation. We have a real shortage of skills in our country, but not just that. I think we also put an awful lot of pressure on young people. It impacts their mental health by telling them there's only really one way to succeed after school, which simply isn't true. So this year we have, for the very first year, made a change where six-year students this year, they've just done the Leaving Cert, when they went to the CAO website, they didn't just see the traditional university options, they also saw apprenticeship options and further education and training options. And I'm hoping that will bring about the beginning of a cultural change and a conversation around the kitchen tables with mums and dads and teachers and guidance counsellors and others about apprenticeships also being a very valid way to get to where you want to get to.
Yeah, sure. The peculiar thing, I suppose, is that CAO's been there for decades. You know, the two have been running alongside each other. Is there something new going on, or is there some social trend we haven't identified? Like, in other words, people have always had those two options going back well into the 70s, 80s and so on. Is there something different going on?
I think being very honest, culturally, we've had a bit of a snobby attitude towards the trades, and we need to snap out of it and snap out of it quickly. We need 50,000 more people. I mean, it's an astonishing number, 50,000 more people by 2030 if we're to hit our housing targets and our climate action targets to work in trades. So, like, there is a reason that there is a shortage of housing in Ireland. There is a reason that it's difficult to get a plumber, an electrician. There's a reason that it can sometimes take longer to get your home retrofitted than you wish. And a lot of this is down to the fact that there are labour shortages. So we've got to start really having a conversation about the value of the trades, the fact that you can actually have a well-paid job and, crucially, a qualification through the apprenticeship route. I often shudder when I get asked in media or in other fora, you know, if some people do third level or some people do an apprenticeship. It's a really ignorant comment, because an apprenticeship is a form of third level. I think we've allowed a system to develop that has, as you rightly suggest, maybe had apprenticeships over there and the CAO in a very different place, where we need to present the full system, all of the third level options to young people.
Now, Minister, I do some work in the university sector, and I know that some of them listening to you, they'll say to themselves, oh, hang on, he's going with apprenticeships. Is that at our cost? So can you reassure people that the funding problems in the universities aren't going to be neglected while you're fixing up the apprenticeship side?
Well, absolutely, because I'm delighted to be the minister who, with colleagues in government, has now settled the question as to how we're going to fund higher education. So we now have a plan to sustainably fund higher education. This has been ducked and dived for far too long. We published it in May. It means we're putting €307 million more into the university sector over the next couple of years. That will do things like reduce the student lecture ratio to the European average. It's not there at the moment. So, yes, it's not an either or. This is about actually not a university versus an ETB or a university versus a technological university. This is actually about developing an education system that's centred around the citizen. And what I'd say to anyone working in third level education, and I think the sector gets this, with the demographic bulge coming, there's actually going to be so many students looking for places in third level, be that an apprenticeship or a university degree or a master's or an upskilling or reskilling course. There's going to be more than enough students to go around. The issue will be about making sure that the right learner gets to the right place at the right time.
Okay, well, Minister, I did say in the introduction, while I have you, as we all us interviewers say, there's a few other political matters knocking around, and you're always very good at answering questions that weren't necessarily scheduled. So let me work through a few of these. We've got a motion of no confidence down next week. We had Mary Lou MacDonald, the Sinn Féin leader, on earlier. She's pretty gung-ho about making this one stick. Now, they have put down motions before, as you would know. Are you disappointed? Are you upset that Joe McHugh, for, I suppose, understandable local political reasons, is not happy with the MICA bill? But are you personally thinking to yourself, that's all we need as we wrap up for the summer, this whole situation unfolding?
No, look, there's a couple of things. I mean, I've no confidence in Mary Lou MacDonald either, so I don't think it'll come as any great shock to your listeners that the opposition don't have confidence in the government and the government doesn't have confidence in the opposition. Don't really think it helps, though, Emmett. I mean, there'll be people in their car driving home tonight. They'll be worried about the cost of fuel. They'll be worried about the cost of rent. They'll be worried about childcare costs, many, many, many important issues that are facing people. We have a job to do now, which is to work flat out between now and September to deliver a budget that is comprehensive and a budget that has two parts. One delivers for 2023, but also looks at what we can do in the immediate term to help families make ends meet. That's where our concentration's been at. If the opposition want to use their time for kind of political theatrics, that is their
call. And are you in any way alarmed by the fact that you seem to have lost a load of rural TDs straight off the bat? I mean, they're out with a statement this afternoon. The Healy Rays are in there and a few others as well. I mean, they're straight away saying, we ain't voting for you guys. Like, there hasn't even been a haggling. I mean, a few days ago, the worry was you'd have to bribe them, I suppose. But now it seems they're not even bribable. So that must alarm you at least.
No, it doesn't really. I mean, the fact that people that oppose the government day in, day out and all Éireann are going to oppose the government next week is not news to me. It doesn't keep me awake at night. What does keep me awake at night are the real challenges that face the country and indeed face the world at the moment. It's a very peculiar time, I think, to be adopting this parliamentary stunt. We have a war on the continent of Europe. We have a major cost of living crisis. We have a political instability now, obviously, in the UK in terms of transitioning to a new government, what that will mean in terms of Brexit, what that will mean in terms of the protocol. There's an awful lot going on, Emmett. The government has the numbers comfortably, in my view, to defeat this stunt next week. We'll set about doing that. I am sorry that you asked me specifically about my colleague and friend Joe McHugh. I'm sorry to see Joe take the decision he took. I can understand he felt he needed to take it. We can have a difference of view in the, a view that he served Fine Gael and the people of Donegal very loyally for a long number of years.
And I believe it came as kind of unexpected. I had one of your colleagues in here the other day who said pretty much he told nobody, this just kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, it might have allowed you at least manage the situation if he'd sort of at least tipped you off about how he felt. I mean, did you have any personal knowledge? Had you been talking to him about the MICA bill, or was this just totally out of the blue?
Truthfully, I didn't have any knowledge, but that doesn't mean that there weren't conversations I'm not aware of. But I mean, truthfully, I wasn't aware of this. I do know the MICA issue has been extraordinarily challenging for any representative in Donegal, and obviously not nearly as challenging as it's been for the people of Donegal and other counties who've been affected. We have really worked as hard as we possibly can to put in place an extraordinarily comprehensive package, and indeed a very expensive package for the taxpayer, for citizens, for people listening to this programme to have to fund. But we're doing it because it's the right thing to do. Joe obviously felt he couldn't support the government on that occasion. And look, I can respectfully disagree with him on this.
OK, listen, let me just get through one or two smaller ones before I let you go. Brand Varadkar, obviously the DPP, the decision went in his favour. Sinn Féin, I had Mary Lou MacDonald on here earlier. She claims that, you know, I said you put a lot of chips on this outcome. It didn't go your way. She didn't see it like that, but we leave that aside. But from your point of view, I mean, is Brand Varadkar damaged one way or the other? You wouldn't choose to be investigated this manner. Yes, the end result was a positive one for him. But, I mean, you're as a politician, you're diminished by an inquiry of that scale that lasts that long. Would you agree with that much?
No, I think it was an extraordinarily stressful time. I think it's something that it went on for a very long time. I don't say that critically. These processes are independent. But the Tánaiste was vindicated in relation to this process. He has been the subject of a number of extraordinarily personalised attacks. Deputy MacDonald, I heard her say the other day, doesn't like personalised attacks. You know, as recently as a couple of weeks ago, this issue was being thrown at him in the Dáil with a whole load of innuendo attached to it in terms of wrongdoing. And that hasn't been the case. An error was made. He apologised. clearly after a very comprehensive and independent investigation that went on an extraordinary long time, the DPP has decided...
But do you think his leadership is damaged at the end of it?
No, I don't. I absolutely don't. And I mean, I think this is about Leo and all of us in Fine Gael doing what we want to do now in terms of really concentrating on the issues that are motivating us day in, day out. He has outlined very clearly, in an extraordinarily clear way, the priority issues for Fine Gael and Fine Gael within government over the coming weeks and months. And they relate to the cost of living crisis and how we can help families in terms of reducing the money going out of their pocket and trying to put a bit of money back in people's pocket too. I think an exciting agenda around tax, making sure people can keep money they earn and not have the government just keep putting its hand in your pocket. And also really important areas around childcare.
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, you know the old political dictum, whatever mistakes you're going to make, the worst ones to avoid are the self-inflicted ones. I suppose there's nobody else to blame but himself. And I know he's been found... You're cleared by the DPP, but look, we don't want to reopen the whole argument. I'm actually also...
The Tunisher statement couldn't have been clearer in relation to that it was an error on his part and his part alone. But that's an extraordinarily different situation to the situation that some people, including his political opponents, tried to portray it over the last number of months. The innuendo, the personalised attacks and the allegations of criminal wrongdoing that have simply been found now not to be the case. And of course, people won't be gracious enough to say to withdraw them.
No, you could be waiting a while for that. I suppose it'll all go in.
It's going to go into
the pot for next week's debate, I suppose. One final question, which is a slightly from left of field, but it was a tragic event in Japan, as you saw overnight, yes. The death of Shinzo Abe. I mean, you might say to yourself, well, what's that got to do with me? Just bear with me. What I think it has to do with all Irish politicians is, as a class, as a group of professionals, you're not attended by great security. I mean, a woman threw a pie, I think, in the face of Leo Varadkar, but 3 or 4 years ago, I think it is now. There's been one or two other instances. You had the famous Joan Burton incident out in Tala a few years ago as well. That ended up in a court case. I mean, do you see something like that awful tragedy? Do you say to yourself, look, these things happen, it's a one-off type of thing? Or do you say, as a politician, and that's your profession, do you say to yourself, you know, we're very informal here in Ireland too, we need to look at that? Or do you say, look, it's just the cost of the way we do business and that's just the culture here and so be it? What way do you react to an event like we've seen?
Well, two things. I mean, the first thing I want to do is extend my sympathy to the people of Japan on the assassination, the brutal assassination of former Prime Minister Abe. I happened to meet the Japanese ambassador yesterday to talk about bilateral links between our two countries, and they are strong and we want them to be stronger. So we all extend our condolences to the family of former Prime Minister Abe and to the people of Japan today, and our Taoiseach has led tributes in that regard. In relation to the general issue of security around politicians and the likes, I mean...
Because you've had protesters outside your own house, right? So, I mean, you've been in that storm.
I refuse to call that protest, because I think there's ways of protesting and then it's just simply thuggery. But, I mean, I love the way politics operates in Ireland. I love the informality of it. I love the context that you can have with people. I love, despite the effort by opponents to suggest politicians are terribly detached, you'd struggle to find politicians in the world who are more accessible than the Irish political system. And I think that's a really good thing. Obviously, security matters are always kept under review by the Garda Commissioner. We generally don't comment on them publicly for good reason, but we always take our advice from the Garda through the Department of Justice, and we'll continue to do so.
Okay, listen, thanks for taking that question. That's also part of the informality of Irish politics, is that we can get a minister on and we can throw any question under the sun at them. It's not scripted, agreed, or etc. So that is part of the positive part of the culture. But I've always got that little personal doubt, fear, etc., about the way we make ourselves as politicians, or how the politicians make themselves available too much. But maybe that's just me. Hopefully we'll never have to ponder over the reality and the balance that needs to be struck.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan,
weekdays from 4 on News Talk.